it's a great honor to be here with you today, and I've just gotten to know your incredible pastor. What a dynamic figure. What a smart guy. So I'm going to talk about an issue that bothers me when I'm living in the Bay Area, because people tell me, I'm a spiritual person, but I don't want any politics in my spirituality. I don't want to hear about politics, because politics is going to bring me down, and spirituality is going to lift me up. And so I decided to talk this morning about the impossibility of separating these two things, at least within the standpoint of the Abrahamic traditions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And later on in the day, I'm going to be talking a lot more about what a spiritual progressive vision could be. Right now, I'm just going to talk a little bit about the why these two can't be separated. While I'm doing that, I'm asking Kat if you wouldn't mind to distribute copies of the magazine Tikkun, and I'd like to ask you to just look at it, look inside briefly at the table of contents or whatever, and then pass it on. Any of you who join later the Network of Spiritual Progressives are welcome to take one of these home. But if you're, you should all have on your and yet a third card. Now, don't give this into the collection. Okay, the third card is simply my request that if anything I say makes any sense to you, that you give me your name and email, and we will then send you for free some of the analyses we put forward about what's going on in the world today. Today I sent out one from an Israeli named Uri Avneri, trying to describe the how, if you really understand what's going on in the Middle East, you'll see how crazy our role has been, Western role has been, in setting up a lot of what we in America are encouraged to think of as their craziness, having nothing to do with our craziness. These are the kinds of, there are many things that we send out like that. Anyway, here I want to say about the three Abrahamic religions. We emerged, starting with Judaism, emerged in a world in which there already was spirituality, in which there was a spirituality that recognized the wonders of the universe. We didn't, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, we didn't create spiritual consciousness. It was already there. But the existing spiritual consciousness was one in which basically the worship of nature was assimilated to the worship of social reality in the following way. That the spiritual religion said, not only is this nature fixed and in a regular pattern, but the fundamental reality of the universe has created the class societies that we live in, with the king and the people who own the land, and then the workers and people who had nothing. All of this is built into the structure of the universe itself, and hence could not be changed. The world, what spirituality was about was getting you to roll with reality, accept the way the world is, including accepting the distribution of wealth and power in the world, and live like, watch the river flow. Don't get excited about trying to change anything, because nothing can be changed. It's just built into the structure of reality that just as we have seasons, so we also have classes. So we have class structures. So we have inequalities. So there's some people born to be kings and some people born to be workers and some people born to be poor. And this is just how it is, the structure of necessity. And along came Judaism with a fundamentally different message. And it's a message that has permeated Christianity and Islam as well. Fundamental message was this, that there is in the universe a force that makes possible the transformation from that which is to that which ought to be. And that force is also known as God. that the God of the universe is a force of transformation, that the God of the universe is a force that makes possible the fundamental transformation of not only our individual lives, not only our internal spiritual lives, but also the social structures within which we live. And so Judaism had as its key story, the story that it was built around, that our Torah was built around, was the liberation from Egypt. And why put so much energy onto that? Because that was a concrete example of what was possible in the world. In other words, it's not just a preaching to say the world can be changed, but our people came into existence to say, we were slaves, and now we're free. And so every Sabbath, every Shabbat, every Sabbath is meant to be a mini reliving of that experience. And then Passover, the big holiday that's coming up in a few weeks for us, is the holiday that's totally about that transformation. But the point of telling that story is to tell us that the world is not fixed, that the world can be fundamentally changed, that the world can be transformed. And in the most fundamental ways, if you got the reading that we just heard, what God sets up is a set of both of rituals, but also of real economic realities to show you that the world can be changed. And so what that reading said, I think it might have been slightly obscured by the translation. I know it in Hebrew it's a little bit better. It says, every 50 years, there is a redistribution, fundamental redistribution. When it says you go to your home, what they're talking about is the original equal distribution of the land between all the tribes, and between each and in within the tribes within each family. And so every 50th year, no matter what has happened economically between then and now, between then and the Jubilee, at the Jubilee, land is redistributed back to the same equal reality that it started out with. And that's why they say, well, you know, and don't cheat anybody by, if they don't know about when the Jubilee is coming, you shouldn't charge more than the number of harvests left till the Jubilee. Because at that point, so you can't sell land in a permanent way. Now, the Torah goes on to say there, but what if somebody says, no, I don't want to go with this, or this is not possible, we can't do this. And God's response to that is to say, hey, wait a second, you guys don't understand. The earth, there is no such thing as private property. There is no such thing as private property. The earth is mine, God says. Was part of what you heard. I don't know if you kind of heard it, but it's God is saying, the earth is mine. You are sojourners here, okay? You're passing through. This earth is mine. And I'm telling you that one of the things that we need is a seventh year, every seventh year, to let the earth lie fallow, nobody working it, and just an entire sabbatical year. And every 50th year, the redistribution of the wealth totally back to the equal position. Now, for some reason, even in my Jewish world, they didn't make a lot of emphasis on this point. Okay? They didn't make a lot of emphasis on this point. But the fundamental message is a revolutionary message. It says that the world can be fundamentally transformed, and we don't just mean inner transformation. We mean redistribution of wealth. We mean equality instituted by the Bible, okay? This is the Bible that Jesus also held to, that the whole earth belongs to God, and that we are sojourners here. And our task is to engage in transformation. So the Hebrew word for transformation and healing and repair is tikkun, T-I-K-K-U-N. And that's what the magazine is. It's about transformation and healing. Jesus was in this tradition, reminding the people of the realists of his time, who thought that they needed to accommodate to Rome, which in the Jewish world was the priestly class doing that, Jesus was there to remind people that God was about shattering the realities of oppression and injustice. So he was a highly political figure, not apolitical, he was a highly political figure. And when he said, love your neighbor as yourself, he probably meant, don't kill them. Now, for all those who think that they can take Christianity and use it as a basis for wars and domination, there's a problem. So they had to, just as we in the Jewish world had to minimize the Jubilee, so in the Christian world, people have tended to minimize this point about loving your neighbor and what it means. So his message is truly a political message. And it is based on the same revolutionary consciousness that the world is not stuck, that it can be fundamentally transformed, and that that our goal is not to accommodate to existing reality, but to transform reality, to do a tikkun of reality. And that's why we've created an interfaith organization called the Network of Spiritual Progressives to get actually make it possible for us to work together as spiritual people who have a commitment to healing and transforming the world. And we have some specific programs. I'm going to talk to you about them a little bit later. Perhaps Kat, who is the executive director of the Network of Spiritual Progressives, will also share some message. I'll just mention the key elements of this. Number one, the new bottom line. We say that we need to be a spiritual progressive is to be somebody who wants a new bottom line. The old bottom line said that when you get it, assess an institution, a corporation, a government policy, any of the institutions that run our society, that you should see how much money or power it generates. And if it's generating money and power, it's efficient, rational, and productive. That was the criterion. We say we want a new criterion of efficiency, rationality, and productivity. So that when you look at a government policy, when you look at a corporation, when you look at our educational system or our legal system or our healthcare system or any part of our world and ask, is it productive, efficient, or rational? We're going to ask the question, by the new bottom line, how much does it tend to produce loving and caring people? How much does it tend to make it to maximize kindness and generosity, environmental and ethical behavior? How much does it help us to look at other human beings and see them not through the framework of utilitarianism, namely, what will you do for me? Because I like you if you can help me advance my interests, but rather to see other human beings as fundamentally valuable whether or not they ever deliver anything for you, okay? To see them as created in the image of God, where the image of God is this force of healing and transformation, okay? And to look at the universe that way, to look at the universe and not look at it and say, gee, I wonder if any part of this planet I can turn into a commodity and sell it. Okay, that's the old bottom line. But to instead judge it efficient, rational, productive, because it elicits from us awe and wonder and radical amazement at the grandeur of creation. It's a very new bottom line. It's a very different way of thinking about the world. It's a way of looking at the world that comes straight out of a spiritual consciousness. To see things as being efficient, rational, and productive to the extent that they maximize love and caring, kindness and generosity, environmental sensitivity, ethical sensitivity, awe and wonder at the grandeur of the universe. This is a spiritual consciousness, and yet we welcome also secular humanists and atheists, because there's nothing here that requires you to commit to at least what people's concept has been of God as a big man in heaven who's running everything, but rather it takes God's message and insists on God's message, which has come through our traditions, but you don't have to come to that same conclusions through God, it can come through it in other ways. God's message that the world needs to be based on love and on generosity and on kindness and on taking care of the planet. So this is a new bottom line. The two other quick little mentions of programs I'll talk about later after the break, after the service. With the Global Marshall Plan, our plan to ask or to fight for a new program to deal with homeland security, instead of seeking domination over the world, to instead have the world look at the United States as the most generous and caring country in the world, rather than the most powerful country in the world. And the ESRA, the Environmental and Social Responsibility Amendment, in which has as one of its planks to take all money out of politics except public funding. So it's not just corporations' money, but also all money out of politics, so that all funding is equal, and to require corporations, in order to maintain their corporate charter, to prove every 5 years in a satisfactory history of environmental and social responsibility to a jury of ordinary citizens. So these are ways of going towards a new kind of world, a new kind of political world that is based on spiritual principles. Now you might say at this point, and hey, is this guy a loony? Does he really think any of this is possible? He's got these nice ideas, but any of this is possible? And here I want to say to you that when the women's movement came forward in the second wave of feminism 50 years ago, and most other women actually at first said to those women, hey, dear, do you not know that patriarchy has been around for 10,000 years? And you think a group in Berkeley and a group in San Francisco and a group in Madison and a group in Ann Arbor and a group in Washington, D.C. and a group in Cambridge, Massachusetts, that is a handful of you are going to change the world and change patriarchy? Well, I don't mean to say that patriarchy has been eliminated, but the amount of changes that have happened in the past 50 years goes so far beyond what even those who initiated that movement thought was possible as to make it, in my view, one of the major miracles of modern times. And if you look at the same thing with regard to the struggle against apartheid in South Africa, the same thing, people say you'll never be able to overcome that. They're just so fixed and so, and it was overcome. And then even 20 years ago, people saying, people in the gay and lesbian movements saying, I don't know if we can go for marriage equality, that's so unrealistic. And the fact is, vast majorities of people would have opposed it 20 years ago and did, and left, and it's ridiculous, okay? But people stood up for and fought for a vision of what they wanted, and it's the huge change in the status and the how many states that we now have GLBT people able to marry, unbelievable. But in each case, the realists were deeply mistaken. And so I want to end this little talk by just saying, I hope we can get together. I hope you'll come and talk some more with me. If not, please fill out one of those things. And we'll have a sign-up thing in back in case you're tired right now of filling out too many little cards. You can just give us your name and write your email as though you were giving it to somebody who is basically an idiot, can't read, because it's so easy to get one little letter wrong or one little number wrong, and then we can't get to reach you. But please consider either joining the Network of Spiritual Progressives or at least giving us your name so that we can contact you and give you some more information, not only about that, but about our analyses of the world. So the point that I want to end with is this, because it's the critical thing about believing in God. God is the force that makes it possible for the world to be transformed from that which is to that which ought to be. I testify to it because I'm part of the people that was enslaved and now we're free. And I'm saying Christianity testifies to it when it talks about resurrection. What do you think that's about? It's about saying don't believe in the existing categories of what is possible and what is real. Okay? So what I'm saying to you is please Do not be realistic. Do not be realistic. Do not spend the next whatever amount of time you have left on this planet, whether it's 80 years or 50 years or 20 years or 10 years, don't spend your time, your money, your energies, putting them into various political causes that have been restricted and narrow in their focus because they have been formulated within the context in which the powerful tell for the rest of us what is possible. And hence, people narrow their concern to, well, we'll just stop fracking here, or we'll just fight for this one little area here, one little area there. No, we need a fundamental healing and transformation of the world. So don't spend your time on those narrow things. Go for your highest vision of the good. The highest vision, we're saying the highest vision of the good is a new bottom line of love, caring, kindness, generosity, environmental sanity, awe and wonder at the grandeur of the universe and treating other human beings as embodiments of the sacred. If that's not your bottom line, whatever is your bottom line, spend the rest of your time going for your highest vision of the world, not for what the realists tell you. Don't be realistic. Thank you so much.